So yesterday we started sorting out what exactly the prohibition is for, or the exclusion of the rule of Shiloh HaKein by both Hekdesh and Harag, right? Both a case where the bird belongs to Hekdesh, or where it killed someone and therefore has to go to court. And we saw the Gemara gives what seems to be a straightforward reason. The Gemara says, Shaleach teshalach es ha'em b'misha ata metzuba l'shalcho, right? Send away the mother if you actually have a command to send it away, if you actually can do that. Yatzazeh she'yata metzuba l'shalcho. This excludes the case where you're not commanded to send it away. Ela la'avio lidei gizbar. But rather, to give it to Hekdesh, to give it to the treasurer of Hekdesh. That was sort of case number one of Hekdesh. And then Ravina extends it. Hugaf oftar shahargis ha'nefesh patr mishiloch. Same thing should apply if the mother bird killed someone, my tama damar krush lechachas aim b'misha damitzu v'shalcho yatzazeh sheyata mitzu v'shalcho ela lavio lebezdin. The same reasoning as before, right? You only have a mitzvah lishaleach if you actually can do that. But here you need to send it not to Hekdesh, not to the gizbar, but rather to Bezdin, right? For it to be have the court case be taken care of and maybe get the death penalty. Right? And the Gemara spells out a couple details there. But right, the straightforward understanding of that, as we saw yesterday, is that you shouldn't be, I think we said, had a previous engagement, right? You're not supposed to be sending this away. You're supposed to be sending it to Hekdesh or to Bezdin, so that's the drasha that the mitzvah doesn't apply. So today we're going to try to elaborate a bit on this idea, both to try to find a couple of alternatives, which we started looking at yesterday in Tosfos, and to sharpen a little bit what exactly the logic is, how exactly this works, and formalize our thinking a little bit. So just to quickly review what we did yesterday in Tosfos, and I guess I'll read through it quickly, but basically Tosfos, along the way, gives the pshat explanation of our Gemara, but also introduces two other explanations by way of the kuntres that he has. So we'll just read. We'll read Tosfos through together again, and then we'll build on that for this year. So Tosfos yatzazeh she'ena tametzuv l'shalcho el lavio liad gizbar. Right. The second drasha being that you want to send it to you want to send the bird to the gizbar, to Hekdesh, rather than doing shiloh hakein, and that's why you'd be exempt from the mitzvah. So perish akuntris, and as we noted, we don't have this in our Rashi, right? Kuntris, what does kuntris literally mean? Does anyone know?
Notebook,
right? So he quotes this notebook. Usually that correlates what we have in Rashi. When it doesn't, we have to wonder, is that because Rashi said this and we just, for whatever reason, don't have the Rashi? Is that because he's referring to a different notebook? Maybe Rashi never said this at all. Hard to know, but we did see yesterday, we saw someone who actually does say this, which is who? The Tosfos Rush, right? So there's definitely a Rishon who holds this view, whether or not it was Rashi. He says, Perish HaKuntris, Ditama Mishum, Delo Amra Torah, Shaleach Litakala. Right? And it sounds like this Kuntris is explaining the Gemara here, right? The Gemara says, you shouldn't send away the mother bird, you instead should give it to the Gizbar. Right, and that's why the mitzvah doesn't apply. And Kuntris says that this is because you would never say shaleach letzakal. You would never tell someone to send away the bird to create problems. Why? What's the problem? It's Hekdesh. It belongs to Hekdesh. It's Isser Hana. If you benefit from the bird, that's prohibited. So you would never say that. Therefore, you should give it to Hekdesh rather than send it away. It sounds like that's the explanation of this Gemara. So but it's an alternate approach to the way we understood it, right? We understood it, well, you shouldn't be sending it away. Instead, you should be giving it to Hekdesh. Here, the point isn't that there's like a direct contradiction there, but rather that if you send it away, it'll cause problems, right? And Tosfos rejects this interpretation. Mikasha, for two reasons. Chada, delishna lo mashmach. That's not what the Gemara sounds like. It sounds like you have an obligation to send it away rather than the obligation or opportunity. Sorry, you have an obligation to give it to the Gizbar, to give it to Hekdesh, rather than the obligation to send it away. It doesn't sound like it's talking about takhala. It doesn't sound like we're worried about results, right, or some possible risks. It sounds like you have an obligation, you have a competing obligation, right? It sounds more deontological than consequentialist, if you want to use that language. Right, that's Tosa's first objection. Ve'od, demazig umukila below nigmardino. The continuation, we understand that the case of the murderous bird is a case of lo nigmardino, where the bird, they didn't have the court case yet, right? So it hasn't been decided that it's chayiv misa. V'im kein, ein bo takala. For that reason, there's no takala. It's not asur bana yet until after that's decided. So, the bird's not asur bana. So what's the problem with sending it away? There won't be a problem with asur bana. We noted yesterday, and we'll see, one of the Achronim notes that there may be other problems, but fine. But for Tosafos' purposes, he's focusing on Isra Hanas, so that wouldn't apply. So that's why he doesn't like this interpretation of the Kuntres, and he says instead, "Venera Kapashe the Kra Darish." The Kapashe the Kra Darish, the straightforward interpretation of the pasuk Demashma Debemidi Shiachol Shalcho Mishtai. If you can send it away, that's a case we're talking about, right? A normal case where you have no competing obligations. You don't need to send it to Hektish. You don't need to send it to court. You can just send it away. That's what the pasuk is talking about. Avol hekdesh mitzvah levil yad gizbar. So that's, I think, the straightforward interpretation. Again, we do need to sharpen a little bit, formalize what he's saying, but that's his preference over the first kuntres approach. And now he's going to suggest a third approach, also citing the kuntres, but here the kuntres itself rejects this. But pirashak bekuntres mi tikach lach lo matzi la suye, right? We don't want to learn it out from tikach lach. Implication is you might have, right? Why not? We learn out from the end of the pasuk, right? We darshan it shaleach tishalach esaim. We darshan from the beginning of the pasuk, but we don't darshan from the end. Esabanim tikach lach. As we noted, we saw in Rashi yesterday, tikach lach v'lo l'kal vecha. Right? You should be able to the mitzvah when mitzvah shiluch kain applies. You should be able to use the eggs for yourself for eating rather than for sending it to a dog. So that excludes a case of not kosher. So why don't we use that same drasha here of tikach lach? No, lo matzi lasuyeh. Dahab beitzei torim lo malim lo nenin. The reason why you can't apply that is because at least one such case, beitzei torim, eggs of a turtle dove, that being a karban. So we know from Gemara in Me'ila, lo malim v'lo nenin, because it's not really part of the karban; it's sort of secondary to it. There's no iser d'oraisa of Me'ila, only d'rabbanan. And for that reason, right, it wouldn't be true that excludes this. This would be included. Midaraisa, you actually can eat these eggs, so the drasha wouldn't work. So that's why the Kuntres, quoted by Tosfos, says that we shouldn't make the drasha from there. As we're going to see, some other people do make a similar drasha to that of that just rejected here. And then Tosfos deals with a bit of a complication. We want to set up this case not only in a scenario of kachi bedek habayis, animals that belong to the Beis HaMikdash, which actually would be asur bana d'oraisa, even in a case of beitzei torim. We want to set up the case according to in a scenario where it's even kachi mizbeach, where it's set to be brought on the mizbeach, and in such a case beitzei torim are only asur midrabanan. This drasha therefore wouldn't work. Right, the drasha doesn't work. And then he does note umiu lashon lehavil liad gizbar. It is a little odd, says Tosfos, that we use the language in the Gemara of to send it to the Gizbar. What do you send to a Gizbar? You send to a Gizbar something that's kachay berek habayis, to redeem, right? Something that's monetarily belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, not something that's a pre-karban that you don't give to the Gizbar, that you bring on the Mizbeach. So that's the Tosfos that we saw yesterday. And as we noted at the time, really there's three possible explanations explanations as to why there's an exclusion of hekdesh from shiluach hakein. The first, or the second one in our Tosfos, is the straightforward one, right? You have a competing obligation or a prior commitment, so the pasuk doesn't apply there. There's the approach that the Kuntres suggests that Tosfos doesn't like, that there's some sort of problem or some sort of takala that it could lead to. Tosfos rejects that. And then the third answer that the Kuntres rejected, that tikach lach, and since you can't eat the eggs, it wouldn't apply here. And as I mentioned, we're going to elaborate on the two alternate explanations, but we're also going to try to sharpen the main approach that Tosfos favors. I see Rina has a question.
Yeah. So is this Tosfos, like, later going to be talked about by or referred to by like a lot of the other commentaries? And if yes, is there any way you could like simplify each of the each of the ideas of Tosfot, like 1, 2, 3, like just like the basic thing that we need to know, because it's just like, for me, it's just like a lot of information, like even though we've gone over it so many times.
Yeah, the three main approaches, yeah. Right? The straightforward, the pshat approach. If you have an other obligation with the bird, there's no mitzvah of shiluach hakein. The approach of the kuntres, that it will lead to some problem, and therefore you shouldn't do it. And the approach rejected by the kuntres, that you only apply the mitzvah of shiluach hakein if you can benefit from the eggs or the chicks, and here you can't. Those are the three basic approaches raised by Tosfos. Again, two of them he rejects, but we're going to resuscitate them in various ways. So that's the big picture, quick summary of what we did yesterday. And why don't we start by looking at source number two, the Tosfos Rush, which I think interestingly, seems to correlate to one degree or another with what Tosfos calls the Kuntres. So does someone want to read Tosfos Rush, and we can sort of see how it fits in with the Tosfos there. Any volunteers? Yeah?
So we could have said that because the Torah wouldn't have said to send something away just to like create problems. And like similarly for a bird that killed someone, so like also like wouldn't want to send a murderous bird out into the wild. It's like easier for the Gemara, I guess, to say that, to like work with the Peshat of the Pasuk that says we should send it off, implying that if it's like happier and like you're not going to lose anything by sending it, so that's when it's where we're going to need to send it.
Right.
But if it's supposed to be doing something else, like to be brought, like to be something that should, or to kill it, then it's where it's not going to need to send it.
Right, great. Very well said. And how does this fit with Tosfos in a couple of different ways? What was number one, right? This, as I mentioned before, this seems to be the kuntres, that or the view of the kuntres, right? How so? Right, he seems to accept the takal idea, right? Whereas Tosfos rejects it. The Tosfos Rush says, yeah, the Gemara could have said the takal idea. The reason why it doesn't say it is, you know, it felt like giving the other reason. But this is a totally accurate, valid, applicable reason, right? Takala does totally apply. Just the Gemara preferred to give a different answer here, but it's not that it's not true. It just didn't mention it. Now, what about Tosfos' objection? Right, Tosfos says that, one interesting thing, notice how Tosfos jumps from Gizbar to the case of Horeg or Bezdin, right? Sending it to Bezdin, right? Notice question number one was, right, the whole Dibar Maskel, the question was on the case of Hekdesh, but then it says Ve'od, and it starts talking about Nigmar Dino. So, right, so Tosfos jumps a little unusually between the two cases, between Hekdesh and Harag. But actually, if they're responding to something very much like the Tosfos Rush here, that makes a lot of sense, because notice how the Tosfos Rush bridges between those two cases, right? It says, Mishun lo amra tar shalecha tekala, v'chein lekaman gami of shaharagas ha-nefesh, right? It sort of presents it as a group option, right? Together, the explanation of Takala is suggested both for Hekdesh and for Harag. So I think, you know, it's pretty clear that whatever Tos is referring to as the Kuntres is very close to the Rush, and that's why it's almost, you know, that same jump is being made. It makes, you know, it sort of makes sense in the Tosfos Rush. It only makes sense in Tosfos if he's reading something just like the Tosfos Rush. Fine. And I think the second half of this Tosfos Rush is more or less equivalent to our Tosfos, so we don't need to go over it again. But I think what we do see from here is we have a Rishon on the record, not just some Rishon that we haven't seen that's getting rejected, but we have an actual Rishon. The actual Tosfos Rush is on board with this idea of Shaleach Letakala being the issue. One difference between the Tosfos Rush, actually I'll put it as a question. Does anyone see a difference between the Tosfos Rush's position and that which is attributed to the Kuntres in our Tosfos? Small difference.
Like
So it seems like the way Tosfos presents it in the Kuntres, that the Kuntres is explaining our Gemara by saying Takala, right? That means Takala. Whereas in the Tosfos Rush, these are two separate answers, right? There's number one, there's the drasha of Anitha Mitzvah L'Shalcho, etc. And alternatively, you could give the answer of Takala, but we prefer not to, right? But Tosfos' first question of how do you read the Gemara doesn't sound like it's talking about Takala. The Tosfos Rush says in Achinami, the Gemara is not talking about Takala. That's a separate answer you could give, but that's not the answer that the Gemara itself is giving, right? So that's just worth keeping in mind. The Takala reason may or may not be an interpretation of our Gemara, right? The way the Kuntres cited by Tosos seem to say it's an interpretation of our Gemara, the way the Tosos Rush sets it up, it's not an interpretation of our Gemara, it's an alternate answer that the Gemara, for whatever reason, chose not to give. Okay, so just worth keeping that in mind. But it is clear, according to the Tosos Rush, these are two separate answers, even if that's less clear within the Kuntres. Okay, and source number three, the Chassam Sofer, jumping forward a few hundred years, the Chassam Sofer has an interesting take on this that it really goes in a similar direction of Takala, but it really has a few different interventions into our sugya to strengthen that view. Do we have a volunteer to read the Chassam Sofer? Okay, Tamar.
Hello, you would give bar. I am here to contrast the Shabbat Tosfos. Fein nir lechora de hafen matino shmei shalona der rak muti hakdesh besada mechiu laviu gizbar. So this is basically saying, should I translate also? Or
mm-hmm. Yeah, please.
Like in Kuntres, in the site by Tosfot, it says that you should bring it to the Gizbar. But it seems that it would only be the case if you yourself made the neder on the object to make it hakdish. And would it really be true that if you saw, like, you know, your friend's hakdish walking around the field, that you'd be I have to bring to the Gizbar? And then it brings down this quote from Bava Metzia where it says, and he's saying that doesn't apply to Hekdesh, so you wouldn't have to return it because it wouldn't be the type of Avida that you have to return.
Right, and notice how he also says, V'chein Ner Lechor, right? He says, there's the Kuntres in Tosfos, right, which Tosfos rejected, and he says, you know, he says it in a very casual way, V'chein, by the way, this is right. Ignoring the fact, I mean, you know, he doesn't want to explicitly say, I argue with Tosfos, but that's what he's doing. He's being cholik on Tosfos. He's holding like the Kuntres, that, you know, or I guess the Tosfos Rush. He probably didn't have a Tosfos Rush, probably wasn't published back then. The Kuntres that Tosfos quotes. But, you know, that's a big deal to say you're just going to reject Tosfos. And right, Tamar, as you said, the logic is really to challenge the Gemara, the straightforward reading of the Gemara, right? The Gemara seems to say, why don't you do a Shiluach HaKein on Hekdesh? Because you have a competing obligation. Your competing obligation is to give it to the Gizbar. The Chassam Sofer says, what are you talking about? There's no such obligation. Where's the Chiyuv? Who said there's an obligation to give random Hekdesh things you find in the field to the Gizbar? That's not your job. Whoever was Makdish it, it's their job, right? If you're Makdish something, make sure that actually the Beis HaMikdash has it. Don't be Makdish it and leave it in the corner so that they don't use it at all. That's your job if you were Makdish. It's not someone else's job. So what do you mean there's this chiyuv to give it to the Mikdash, to the Gizbar? So it must be, he's going to say in a second, that that's not the real obligation. Not like Tosfos said, you know, pshat pashte the krah, that you're not going to be sending it away because you have to give it to Hekdesh. There's no obligation to give it to Hekdesh. So the explanation has to be something else. Okay, so keep going, Tamar. Ella.
Ella Shemekhuyab, Mohatil Metakalas Rabbi Machirim, Shiavu Achra, Velo Yakir Shemu Hekdesh, Yavu Lahanus Vimenu. Alkein Mitzvah Levi Lukizbar, Misham Takala, the Ein Zek Moshe Shalach Takala Ba'alma, Shah Takala Ba Al Yedei HaMishalech, Ella Haka Hu Salek HaTakala. So he's pretty much saying that the chiyuv isn't to return it to the gizbar, but to protect people from, you know, doing the ila, and therefore it's a takala because people are going to see it walking around. They're not going to know that it's an ila, and they're going to use it and they're going to benefit from it. And therefore, he's like preventing the takala for other people.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And right, as we said, you know, if as we said, there's no actual obligation to return it to Hekdesh, or as he quoted the Drasha, right? There's no mitzvah Hashavas Aveda to Hekdesh. So what is it? As Tamar just said, it's to save others, Lehatzil, Mitakalas Rabim, Acherim, right? To save others from the problem of, right, you have this bird and it belongs to Hekdesh and you use it, that's Usser, that's a problem. So it's not the usual issue of takala. Usually when the Gemara talks about takala, it's you by doing this will cause a problem. Here, you didn't really do anything per se, because, you know, someone else was makdish this bird, it's just out there, but you sort of have an obligation to, if you see a hektish bird out there, to help people out, you know, do everyone a favor and get such a bird off the streets. Right, that's your job. So it's a little different, and that's sort of acknowledging a bit of a weakness of his argument, that usually takala is where you created the problem. We tell you not to do it here. You have some sort of obligation to solve the problem. So that does weaken his view a bit. But no, he says that's what the drasha is, right? That's what our Gemara is saying. That, right, you have to give it to the Gizbar in order to avoid this problem. Now, if we were to ask, right, we mentioned before, the Kuntris, as cited by Tosfos, versus the Tosfos Rush. One of them, the Kuntris, said that our Gemara actually means Takala, whereas Tosfos Rush says that Takala is an alternate explanation. Which is the Chassam Sofer going with? Tosfos Rush. How so?
Because he doesn't think it's the explanation of the Gemara. Well, I guess, no, actually maybe the Tosfos.
Yeah, it sounds like he's going with the Kuntris cited in Tosfos, right? Because his proof is that the other explanation doesn't work, right? His big proof is there's no obligation to give it back to Hekdesh. There's no obligation to give it to Hekdesh, so it must be that the Gemara means something else. That the Gemara actually means takala, like the Kuntris in Tosfos. Okay, keep reading. Tomorrow I'll take questions when we're done with this piece.
So now it refers to Ravina's statement about the like birds that kill people, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Ravina extends it, right? He says, "Asi Shaper, this fits well with that." Okay.
The lo nema pshita hanuhach ela mishum deha ve'arta hara nami eno mitzvah b'shum mago kevan she'adayin lo nigmar dino. So I guess like you shouldn't say like, oh, it's also obvious that ve'arta hara, like, you have to, I guess, like, prevent the pigeon from, you have to bring the pigeon into the basin. Because this also isn't a mitzvah. You're not meant to do this in a place where the din isn't nigmar, where, let's say, they didn't come up with a verdict whether the bird was guilty yet.
Or mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So he's right. And it's a bit of an odd proof, but it's this is what he says is a proof, or it fits well, that it's not obvious, right? You might have said, following the, you know, the pshat in the Gemara, right? If you have a competing obligation for the bird, so then you don't need to do shiloh hakein, right? So, okay, so you already said if they have a competing obligation of giving it to Hekdesh, obviously if you have a competing obligation of sending it to Bezdin, then you'd also be putter. So shouldn't that be obvious? Okay, I don't think it's that obvious, but fine, but that's the question. And he says, well, the point is, we're thinking about takala. The point isn't that there's something else for the bird to do. The point is that we have to figure out, is it a sufficient takala? And in this case, it's by no means obvious that the takala of a bird that hasn't yet been convicted is sufficient to say that it would still play a role here, right? Okay, so keep going. Ella?
Ella lahasir takala samazik of hahori nefashos. Rather, we have to remove the takala of a bird that, like, the danger of a bird that kills people. V'shas mari mi takala samichshol avira v'ravina mosi takala samichshol hezik guf. So in Shas, it discusses, you know, deals with takala from people who, like, preventing people from doing an avera. And Ravina adds to this a takala of someone who might come to damage themselves.
Right, or damage others.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, right, exactly. And that's the chiddush, right? That we're, even though it's not yet chayiv misa, it's not yet even a convicted felon. And we don't even know if it's dangerous fully. Still, it might be a risk. That's reason enough. That's takala enough. We're not going to read the rest of the piece inside. Mainly what he says there is Tosfos seems to be focusing on, we mentioned this yesterday when we were reading Tosfos seems to be focusing on a takala of Isser Hana, right? And that's, they seem to have a very narrow view of what takala would be. Whereas the Chassam Sofer would say that the kuntres is very much open to a broader definition of takala. There's takala of people misusing hekdesh. There's a takala of people getting hurt. Those are all takalas, and we need to worry about all of them. And that's the basis of our Gemara. So the Chassam Sofer very much on board with the view of takala, and that's actually how he reads the Gemara. Right, that's his reading of the Gemara, because what else is the obligation? Is there actually an obligation to give the money to Hekdesh, or give the bird to Hekdesh, rather? Not necessarily. And we mentioned yesterday, is there an obligation to bring the bird to justice? Right, uviyar tar mikirecha, by animals. That's also not clear. Rashi seems to say there is in the Gemara, but that's not obvious. It's a machlokes, as mentioned before, between the Raivin and the Magid Mishnah. It's not at all obvious that that's the case. So if you reject the idea that there's a real obligation to send the bird to Hekdesh, send the bird to Beis Din, what are you left with? You have to understand that the Gemara is talking about takala instead, following the Perish HaKuntres. That's the Chassam Sofer, and I think we'll take some questions now. Rina, you have your hand up, and I'll take Nedi after that.
Okay, you mentioned Hashavat Aveda, that mitzvah, so I don't think I saw that word anywhere, but would you say that somewhere there's like the whole idea of bringing the Hekdesh back to the Beit HaMikdash, the bringing the bird that's Hekdesh back to the Beit HaMikdash, would that be a case of Hashavat Aveda, or?
Yeah, so the Chassam Sofer implicitly denies that possibility. When he says, Kol Aveda Sachicha Velo Hekdesh, right? That pasuk of Kol Aveda Sachicha is V'chein Ta'asel Kol Aveda Sachicha Asher Tovad Mimenu Mtsasa. This is what you should do, namely returning the lost object to all your brethren if they lose something. L'chol Aveda Sachicha to your brethren, a lost item of your brethren, but not Hekdesh. That's the exclusion. And therefore, there's no mitzvah of Shavas Aveda by Hekdesh. So don't say, right, you don't say that there's an obligation of Shavas Aveda. There isn't. That's this drasha that he provides. So in theory, you might have said that, but right, but that's why he goes out of his way to supply this drasha that there wouldn't be. I do think it's possible to argue on this. You could say that, you know, we're not going to see people say this inside, but it's not unreasonable to say that there's an obligation to help Hekdesh, just like, you know, if you're Makdash, you have to give it to Hekdesh. And even if you weren't the one who was Makdash, if you know something belongs to Hekdesh and they're not going to have it otherwise, you might say that that's just, you know, part of the mitzvah of, you know, of taking Kachim seriously, or, you know, you know, I don't know, it'd be interesting where you'd categorize it, but you could say there's a mitzvah there as well.
Actually, I still have a question on this, because how is this different than Hashavat Aveda? Because I think, like, when I first read it, that I think that's the association that came to my mind, that I don't know if that's like a deraita or what, but I think Hashavat Aveda, I think that, like, that's the first association that came to my mind. So how does Chassam Sofer explain how this is not a case of Hashavat Aveda? I didn't really
because
fully get
it's Hekdesh. It's not Achicha. It's not your brother's lost object. It's a lost object belonging to Hekdesh. So it's excluded from that drasha.
Wait. Isn't a Kohen also our brother considered?
Kohanim don't own Hekdesh. Hekdesh is owned by the corporate entity of the Mikdash, Mikdash Inc.
Oh.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay,
Nedi.
Yeah, I'm just wondering why it is that the Chassam Sofer assumes that we're, like, talking about a case where it's, like, someone else's Hekdesh, especially because, like, in the continuation of the Gemara, it seems like we actually do think that we're talking about a case where, like, you are the one who's Makdash it.
Fair question. I think what he would say is, without getting too much into the next Gemara that we're going to do tomorrow, because people probably haven't prepared it yet, but presumably what he would say is, once it runs away from you, it's not considered your Hekdesh anymore. But I think your direction, that may actually be the best way of pushing back on the Chassam Sofer, to say, no, there is an obligation to be Makdish something, you know, that you had a hand in, even if you don't formally own it anymore, or even if it's, you know, it ran away, it's left your jurisdiction, you still do have an obligation as the person who was makdish it, right? At the very least, you could argue in the Chassam Sofer like that. You might even go further and say that even a third party should, you know, swoop in, not intended, and be makdish the bird. That's a fair point. I don't want to get into the intricacies of that, because we're going to do that tomorrow. But yeah, okay, Sarah.
I think I missed where we established that the person who was makdish it has a greater obligation to bring it to the Beit HaMikdash.
Yeah,
the
Chassam Sofer sort of assumes that, right?
Like, could it just be that there's no obligation even for you? Like, it's just Mukdash, but so, like, I don't have to. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the reason why the Chassam Sofer assumes that there's a difference between for you, for a person Makdash and others, is because it's just unthinkable that you could be Makdash stuff and then leave it in a corner somewhere, right? Let's say I have this really fancy painting. It's worth millions of dollars. I'm Makdash it to Bet HaKabayis. But you know what? I don't feel like handing it over to the Gizbar yet, so I'll leave it in my house until I die, right? And I'll benefit from it. Well, not halachically benefit, because that would be usur, but I will indirectly benefit from it. I hang it in my house for the rest of it. Is that mutter? So I think for the Chassam Sofer, it's unthinkable that would be okay, because that undermines the whole idea of Hekdesh, right? The mitzvah of Hekdesh, Kiyakdishu es beso kodesh l'Hashem, whatever exactly you'd figure out what the pasuk is, what the drasha is, the mitzvah of Hekdesh implies, the category of Hekdesh implies that you have to actually give it to Hekdesh after your makdish. I think that's what the Chassam Sofer would say. I don't know of a specific drasha, which is why he doesn't invoke one, but I think he would just say it's implicit in what Hekdesh means. But yeah, it's a fair point. And that's why this is like a bit of a fuzzy question, right? Do you have an obligation? Do other people have an obligation? It's not so clear what your sources are. There's a little bit of intuition going on here. Yeah, fair point. Other comments or questions? Maybe even someone in the room. Okay, so that's the Chassam Sofer. And I think with this, we've fleshed out a little bit this one of the alternate options, the option of Takala. Again, both the Tosfos Rush, the Kuntres cited in Tosfos, and the Chassam Sofer all seem to take this view with some small differences. Kuntres and the Chassam Sofer following him say it's an interpretation of the Gemara, whereas the Tosfos Rush says it's an alternate approach the Gemara doesn't say. And the Chassam Sofer fleshes out why you'd want to say this, which is because maybe there's nothing else to say, but there's no other obligation, and the Gemara read Kipshuto doesn't really work. And that leads to some interesting assumptions about Hekdesh and how that would go. But there seems to be some degree of obligation, l'salik hatakala, to avoid leaving Hekdesh birds out there, or murderous birds out there. Right. Okay. So that's piece number one. That's shita number one. We will elaborate on the other shita, the third piece quoted in Tosfos, of tikach lach, later when we look at the Rambam. Spoiler alert. So we'll get there when we get there. For now, I guess we'll take a question, and then we'll try to sharpen the approach that Tosfos takes, right? The approach of what the Gemara seems to say. You have this competing obligation to send it away. Sorry, to send it to Hekdesh or to send it to Bezdin, therefore you shouldn't send it away. So we're going to sharpen that, but first, question.
I guess I just thought of a question about how he's formulating it. Is that the Kala kind of like an alternate obligation that beats out the Shiluch HaKan, or is it like because there's a Tekala, it's excluded from Shiluch HaKan? Like,
okay.
You never referred to that.
That is, I like that question a lot, so much that we'll dedicate the next half hour to answering that question. But maybe we'll ask it, we'll get to Takala, but maybe we'll first ask it on the Gemara's main point, right, of Shaleach Tishalach Esa'im, B'misha Ata Mitzuv L'Shalcho, Yata Zeshe Iata Mitzuv L'Shalcho, Ela Lavio L'Dei Gizbar, or L'Bezdin. Right, so what Tamar is asking, I think is a very fundamental chakira, is how do we understand that, right? You don't send it away, because you have this competing obligation to send it to the Gizbar, or to Bezdin. Right, so in each of those cases, in both the Hekdesh case and the Harag case, how does that work? What are the mechanics of that drasha? Are we saying that, well, on the one hand, you're supposed to send it away because it's a mother bird, and that's what you do, Shiloh HaKein. On the other hand, you have an obligation to send it to Hekdesh, to the Gizbar, because it's Hekdesh. That's what you do. You have two obligations. It's a clash, right? You can't do both at once. So you have to choose, and which one wins out? That the drasha, the pasuk tells us that the one that wins out is Hekdesh rather than sending it away. Is that what the drasha is? Right, it's sort of like a clash. Right, you have two obligations. What do you do, A or B, and go with A, or is the drasha rather saying that it's not a clash? It doesn't get off the ground. Also, not pun intended. But basically, as long as there's a prior obligation, it doesn't matter if it's stronger or weaker, that's not the issue. As long as there's a prior obligation, sending it to Bezdin, sending it away, the obligation of Shaleach Tishlach Zayim doesn't take effect. Right? It doesn't start. The obligation to send them the other way doesn't start if there's any other obligation, even if it's an obligation that would theoretically be weaker. than the obligation of Shalach Tishalach. Now, I think those are two. Those are the two main studim of how to understand this. I think there's a subtle third possibility that we'll get to later. But first, I think there's four hands. So, okay, we'll start with Dvorah. We'll get around. Yeah.
Okay, the way that you're phrasing it with prior obligation, would that imply then that let's say you want the eggs, and then you're like, and I'm going to hekdesh this bird after you decide that you're going to take the eggs, then would we still say that Shiluach HaKain doesn't take effect even if it came first?
Right, so I think the Gemara on Kuf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph talks about a scenario like that where you end up, you want to be makdish it after you already had the chiyuv. So it's clear from the Gemara there that the chiyuv, once the chiyuv takes effect to send it away, you have to send it away. But I don't think that gets, that doesn't necessarily challenge this issue, because you could just say once the obligation is there, it's not mufka, right? But that's different than saying that the obligation doesn't take effect. Okay. But yeah, good question. And when you get to the Gemara tomorrow, it's good. It's good. You were mechavein to the Gemara. Okay, was there another question here? Is that, yeah?
Is it clear? I guess I'm just trying to understand the obligation of hekdesh. Like, is it clear? I mean, I guess what brought up, the Chasam Sofer seems to say that there's no obligation of hekdesh on the person unless you were makdesh yourself. So is that true? Is that clear that, like, the obligation of hekdesh is on whoever, is on the person that is makdesh, or is it on the object once? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes. So definitely the status, the object has the status of hekdesh. But then, so that, in terms of like the fundamental status, there's a second order obligation to make sure that hekdesh gets into the right hands. Then the question is, who is that second order obligation? Who has that chiyuv? And that is not clear. The Chasam Sofer really thinks it's just the person who's makdesh. I think everybody else who doesn't raise his question would say, no, everyone has a chiyuv. So I think,
so that's really a question, because you really can't, that would really take away that the reason of having a prior obligation, because if you're not obligated, then really Shiloh HaKain would make sense.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, right. The Chasam Sofer only works given his prior assumption about who's responsible for sending Hekdesh to the basement, right? If not for that, he wouldn't have the question on the Gemara, and then he wouldn't have his new approach, etc. Yeah.
Okay, just wanted to clarify.
Sure, yeah. Zoe and then Sarah.
Hi, the headset doesn't work when I talk with the microphone. I can think of two model frames for this, of understanding this idea. One of them would be if you're already doing some kind of mitzvah, then other mitzvot are set aside. And the case I'm thinking of specifically is if you're a shliach for a mitzvah, you're exempt from sukkah. The other model I could think of this is you're just delcha, like this is just overriding something. And that seems to often be that you have more of an obligation to one mitzvah than to another. And I'm wondering does this fit into one of those two frameworks, or is this a different one entirely?
Yeah, great. So in terms of osig b'mitzvah, pater in a mitzvah, so the chakira that people ask in that context is exactly this question. Is it that, osig b'mitzvah, somehow it's more important because you started or something, and therefore you don't do the other thing, or there's a clash in some way, or do you just say no, you just like turn off all your mitzvah radar and you just don't do anything, right? That I think is one of the chakiros, one of the questions people ask there. In terms of dechuya, right, so there's a question generally, dechuya's a rival of sorts is hutra, right? The question is hutra or dechuya, which is also sort of parallel to our question. Is it that there's a clash, right, and one's docha the other, or is it hutra in the sense that, if you have one, the other one doesn't get off the ground, right? So I think these are the exactly parallel models, and both models exist throughout Shas. The question is, in this case, how do we understand the Gemara?
Hutra dechuya was last year's stuff.
it keeps coming back. Sarah.
So I'm asking this because you were speaking in like chronological terms, like one chiyuv exists and then another possibly also falls on it or doesn't. And also because I don't know if we like addressed fully the nature of the chiyuv of Shiloh HaKain. Is it something that like you can opt to do, or like is there a positive value in doing it? Because if the latter, then we could say that Shiloh HaKain applies on any stem cane, right? And then in that case, how could you then possibly be makdish it shouldn't the first layer block the second one? If we're speaking chronologically.
Okay, so great question. The original plan was to deal with that question of what degree of chiyuv is there on sending away the bird. We were hoping to get to that today. It looks like it's going to be more likely Monday. But even if you take the strongest view that you should go around, you know, finding all the mother birds, sending them away and taking their eggs, even if you took that view, it's not a hard chiyuv. It's not a chiyuv in the sense that I don't know, you have a mitzvah to eat Karban Pesach and you have a mitzvah to send away the mother bird and it's the same sort of chiyuv. No one takes it that far. So I think for our purposes, that wouldn't come into play because it's not a real chiyuv in that sense. There's, you know, it's more like you should do something, and then once you get to a certain point, that triggers a chiyuv. But
But even without that, like, could we still say that the bird has some sort of status, and you can't tamper with that? You can't tamper with that, even like hypothetical chiyuv or like the ability for someone to do a mitzvah with it by imposing another obligation, which is like bringing it to the gizmar.
Yeah, okay, so I think this is, if I understood you correctly, I think this is a version of what I wanted to throw out as the third option, but since you raised it now, we'll go with it now, right? So the first two approaches were very much focused on, I have an obligation to do something, right? I have an obligation to send away the bird, therefore, that overrides a different obligation I have, or therefore, a different obligation doesn't get off the ground. Or did I do it backwards? I did it backwards, right? I have an obligation to send this to Hekdesh, therefore, it overrides the mitzvah, what would otherwise be a mitzvah action I have to do to send it away, or that mitzvah doesn't get off the ground. There's, I think what Sarah's saying is there's a third approach, which is it's not about me and my obligation per se, it's that something about this animal, something about its status is such that it's excluded. It's mufka, so to speak, from the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein. Right? And the fact that it's Hekdesh, the fact that it belongs to Hekdesh means it's just excluded. It's just not part of that category. Or the fact that it needs to go to court, right? It just, because it killed someone, potentially, makes it excluded from the category of Shiluach HaKein. So I think that is a third approach. We'll see that in a bit. There's different versions of it. Some are more, I think, like monetary-based, like, you know, it belongs to Hekdesh, therefore you have no right to send it away. Other versions of it could just be something about the status of the bird, but I think that is a third approach, right? So, we put all our Hakira cards on the table up front, and that we'll be able to see it in the sources. Yeah?
But can we not go the other way? That, like, it had the Shiluach HaKein status, and then, like why do we assume that, Hekdesh always takes precedence, I guess is what I'm saying.
So, you know, why questions aren't always answerable, but depending on, let's use your question and play it out according to all three possible tracks, right? So if you have the track of overriding, why would Shiluach HaKein lose out? Well, the answer must be that these other mitzvahs are somehow stronger. We'll have to figure that out. If you think it's not about overriding, but about it sort of doesn't take effect, well, then the answer is pretty clear, right? Because Shiluach HaKein, as we just said, the obligation of Shiluach HaKein didn't take effect yet. What happened first was the obligation to send it to Beis Din, or the obligation to send it to the Gizbar, so it came first, so the other one doesn't get off the ground, right? And on the third approach, that's something about the status, also it would be about order, right? The fact that this bird was previously belonged to Hekdesh, or, you know, had the status of a murderous bird or whatnot, or, you know, potentially murderous bird, means that it's excluded categorically from Shiluach HaKein. So I think, depending on which approach you have, you'll end up with different answers to that question of why it wins out, but we'll see how that plays itself out in our sources.
I still don't understand why we speak of the Hekdesh as the previous obligation.
Because it was owned by Hekdesh before you encountered the bird.
But what I was saying before is that perhaps we could speak of a status on the bird even before you encounter it.
Right, and I don't think anyone holds that. I think we'll see this a bit more on Kuf Lamed Tes. But and when we do the sugya next Monday, but even if you have the strongest view of Shiluach HaKein, no one says that there is some sort of status on every bird that it must be sent. It's only ki yikare kantzipor lefanecha. You have to encounter it for that to take effect. And prior to that encounter, it had the status of Hekdesh or murderous. Yeah. Question?
Yeah. For the last Hakira, can you say that, like, based on the language of the drash, where it says, like, you're commanded to, like, send it away versus, like,
Maybe. It sort of depends on what you're emphasizing, right? Right, the me here is referring to the bird. So do you emphasize b'mi, she'ata mitzuv l'shalcho, right, for that bird that you need to send away? Or do you say b'mi, she'ata mitzuv l'shalcho, right? What are you focusing on? Right, but they're both there. The question is, what's the emphasis, conceptually speaking? So I think you can take it either way based on the words of the Gemara. But yeah, you know, that definitely on the approaches that are focused on your action, you'd emphasize the action. And maybe that's slightly more the mashmaos of the Gemara, but I think you could take it either way. Rina.
Okay, you mentioned the term chakira, and although I've heard it before, what do you mean by that in Talmud learning? Like, how is chakira different than everything else we've been learning? The other styles of learning that we've been doing.
Okay, so there's like a whole bibliography of articles on this topic I could send you. But the short answer is chakira usually aims at a sharp conceptual distinction that isn't always clear or laid out in earlier sources, but you know, it's sort of a more achronish, contemporary, brisker style question to distinguish between conceptual possibilities. Sometimes you find chakiras in the Rishonim and whatever, and it's not a hard line between chakiras and other inquiries. But generally, the focus on conceptual issues is the highlight of the chakira, central to the definition of chakira. If you want, shoot me an email and what distinguishes the brisker style from other styles. There's a lot written on the topic. Any other questions or thoughts? Okay, so we said the chakira, so now we can go home, right? We want to see, we should try to see how this plays out in the various Rishonim and Achronim that we're going to look at, whether they take sides on this issue, most likely implicitly. So let's start with the Ran. And do we have a volunteer for reading the Ran? Yeah?
I can try, but it was a little rough.
Okay.
So this is about the making murderous bird.
Mm-hmm. Right, and just we should flag, sorry cutting you off, that right, there are two different cases in the Gemara. There's Hekdesh and there's Harag, and they might be the same, they may be different, so we should track, as Dvar just did, which case we're talking about, and consider that things carry over from one to the other, although they don't necessarily have to. Okay.
Okay. Okay, so in the Gemara, we say that because it has ubiarta, it doesn't have to be taint. But some people question this, and they say, well, we should take the ase and the lotase if she wants. The ase being to send the bird away, and the lotase being don't take the mother bird on her eggs. And that ase plus lotase should trump the ase, the single ase of ubiarta. So we should have shiloh hakein apply to the murderous bird. Is that okay so far?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great.
V'tirtu da'asei ubi'arta adif tfei mitnei shezeo karcho mitzvah alav v'aro. Aval shiloah mi hava mitzvah mutelos alav. Harei em lo ratza likha chabanim patrami l'shloha. So, the response would be that the asei of ubi'arta, of killing the murderous bird, is preferred over the ase lo tase shilo chakein, because the ubi arta is something that you have to do. There's no choice about it. You have to get rid of this murderous bird via death penalty. But shilo chakein, it's not something that you have to do. Nobody says it's something that you have to do. It's just, if you want to do it, then you do it. If you want to take the eggs, then you send away the bird. If you don't, then you don't have to. So if you don't want to take the eggs, you don't have to send the bird. So then you have like a necessary ase over a choice of, an optional ase lo tase. The hilchach ase ki ha lo tach efi luav greita. And therefore, the ase of this, ase ki ha lo tach efi luav greita. This ase of shiloh chakein wouldn't even push away a lav by itself, which generally we push away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, v'tmahini, da'afilu ase lo tase lo tach yase. So this is baffling to me. Because even an ase and a lo tase shouldn't be able to be docha an ase. So is this the question?
I think he's saying it's an odd syntax. But I think he's saying it's funny. I feel ase and a lo tase. How could it be that an ase and a lo tase wouldn't beat out an ase?
Ah,
question.
It should have to beat out Naseh. Yeah, it's odd syntax, but he's sort of questioning everything he said earlier in the piece, right? Okay. He's a little self-doubt on the lumdus, or the on the logic he provided, let's say. Yeah?
So he's saying that was, okay, even though he has that nice answer about the optional versus not optional, he's like, but really, the Asi Lot HaSei of Shiloh HaKain should push off the Asi of Ubi Arta, so we should have Shiloh HaKain for the martyr's birth. The Anan Amrina and the Ati Asi Lot HaSei great. So we say that an Asi can come and push away a solo Lot HaSei, about Asi Di Yidcha Asi, but Afilu Da Olin Di Itbe Lav Lo. But we would say that an Asi pushing off an Asi, or even an Asi, I guess, with the Lot HaSei pushing off an Asi, doesn't. So
right.
Essays are unpushyanable.
Right, and he ends with Sarkian. He's not sure. Meaning, he gave an answer, and then he sort of backtracked on his answers. He's not sure. But let's forget about the Tmihani, the last piece, where he backs off on it. I mean, let's work with the question he raised and the answer he suggested, right? We can leave that answer as Tsarachian, like not fully sure that he's on board with it. So in the question of the run, right, why shouldn't the Asay plus Los Asay of Shiloh HaKain override the Asay of Uvi Arta, right? Sort of like along Sarah's lines, right? Why doesn't it win out? Why can't Shiloh HaKain win out? So, among the conceptual possibilities we laid out before, what's that question assuming? What track is the question going with? Right, just to remind ourselves, the three approaches were clash versus doesn't get off the ground versus both of those in terms of your obligation, and then the third one in terms of the status of the object. So Dvorah, what would you think in terms of the question?
Totally clash,
right? It's like, you know, you get up with your assay, right? And then they have this one's bigger because it has assay and a los assay, and right? So it's very much clash oriented. That's the question, right? And if you're going by clash, you'd think that Shiloh HaKain should win out. So then why do we not say that? And what's the answer?
Theoretically optional.
Right, Shiloh HaKain is optional. So what comes out, so is he still on clash track or not? What would you all say?
Then he can't be on the clash track because it's optional, because then it's two different statuses.
Right, so one way of looking at it is, right, it's not a clash anymore. It's, you know, this is an option, this is not an option. And because Shiloh HaKain is only something is optional, so it doesn't get off the ground because there's a real chiyuv in place already. That's one way of reading it. How else might you read it?
Wait, what was your first?
The first point is that, as he argues, it's not a mitzvah mutelas alav. It's not an obligation you have per se. It's a mitzvah you can do. You don't have to do it, right? And Sarah, this goes to what you were saying before, right? The degree to which it's a real obligation or not. So he is getting into that a little bit. Since Shiloh HaKain is an option, not an obligation, so it loses out to Hekdesh or whatever the alternate thing is. So what Hannah was suggesting is that, okay, so he's backing off, right? The shift here from question to answer is a very lumdish shift, right? He's shifting from looking at this as a clash, and if you read the Gemara as a clash, then it won't work. Answer is, no, it's not about a clash. It's about not getting off the ground. And Shiloh HaKain never gets off the ground because it's an option. What's not an option is the competing mitzvah. So Shiloh HaKain doesn't get off the ground. That's one way of looking at it. I think it's also possible to read it in the other way. Maybe he's still on a clash track, right? He still understands that the din here is based on the two factors going up against one another. But the fact that Shiloh HaKain is optional makes it quantitatively weaker, right? You still have an optional Shiloh HaKain, which is not say and a lo sase, that's a big deal. And you have a chiyuv of whatever the actual chiyuv is, whichever case. So then you fight it out. And it turns out that Shiloh HaKain is, even though it's an asay and a los asay, the fact that it's optional makes it weaker. You could look at it still as a clash, as a quantitative point. And then at the end, he has some doubts about this. Maybe some of the doubts are whether it actually is stronger or not, right? Maybe asay and a los asay, even if it's optional, still should be stronger. And maybe that's what the doubting at the end is about. Not clear, hard to know for sure, but I think it's possible, I think it's clear the Havamin of the Ran is definitely clash. Whether the Maskana of the Ran is to say, we're not thinking about clash anymore, we're thinking about not getting off the ground, right? Or whether he remains on the clash track, just he, you know, he changes the numbers a bit, because it's a rishus, I think there's room to argue about that. Yeah?
Is there anyone who says that, I mean, maybe we'll get to this next week, which is kind of like Sarah's question, but is there anyone who says that shul hakin isn't optional, because therefore that would destroy...
So no one says, like, no one says the same way you have to eat matzah on Pesach, you have to do shiloh hakein. No one says that. So I think for that reason, no, the answer is no, right? But there will be a range of views, some of which will be not like the Ron. So stay tuned. Yeah, that'll be on Monday. Rina, is your hand, yeah.
Okay, so my question is there an opinion, because there's like two parts to my question. One, is there an opinion that says that you could, you know, walk down the street, see a shiloh hakein, and just choose. You definitely know that that particular bird, you're supposed to do the mitzvah of shiloh hakein on it, but you just are too busy that day. You don't want to do it. Is there an opinion like that? And my second part of my question is a parallel association that I have with this is the mitzvah of moving to the land of Israel. So I know there's a machloket based on what I learned. Some say you just have to move to the land of Israel, like no matter what, like you have to. And then some say, oh, like it's a nice thing to do, but like if you want to live in another country, and especially if you've never lived in Eretz Israel before, and especially like all these other reasoning behind it, then you don't really have to.
So on both of those questions, both what is the status, how much of a chiyuv is there if you encounter it, and how comparable is that to mitzvahs, yishuv Eretz Yisrael, chiyuv, kiyum, those questions we'll deal with on Monday. All fair questions, but I want to deal with that as one topic, and you know, everything ties together, but we'll get there when we get there. I will note that I'm very happy you asked the question. Why? Because as you can see, either on your screen or in the room, we have a big Kadima B'nai Akiva on the wall. So you're obviously influenced by that. And that shows that even though some of us are here in person and some of us are here on the screen, we all have the same influence of the walls of the Beit Midrash, of the Beis Medrash. So I'm very happy that you asked that, because it shows that we're really all integrated as a group. So thank you for that. And hold off till Monday, and we'll get into that in further detail. Okay.
Hopefully we
can leave aside that question until we resolve it. Okay, so the Rav Meir Simcha, Kedusha Rav Meir Simcha, responds in some ways to the Ron. And we'll also touch on some of our conceptual issues. And maybe I'll read the piece just to get to continue the logic we've been building. So he quotes the Gemara, Sham, right, the Gemara there, Yatza Zeshe, that's the second case. Again, sending the bird to Bezdin rather than doing shiloh hakein. So hadelo asi asei velo sasei the shiloh hakein, bedachi asei the viarta armikir becha. The question of the Ron, right? He says the question of the Ron. What about that? Nira de ein ze begeder hadechia. It appears that this is not in the category of dechia. It's not categorized as one thing overriding something else. Kemosha nomar sheim ein la adam lulav yigzol mamon shel chavero. Right? Here's a question. What's, you know, mitzvah of shaking lulav? That's a mitzvah sase, right? Stealing, that's a lo sase, right? So, okay, ase docha lo sase, you should steal a lulav and shake it, right? We don't say that. Why not? It's not begeder hadachia. The two are not in conflict such that they should go up against one another, right? And I think, like, he's basically saying our hakira in, you know, more or less the same words. Geder hadachia means you look at it as a clash. This is not begeder hadachia. You don't look at it as a clash. So how do you look at it? Fine. V'yikne b'hem lulav. Does that hevel, right? That's crazy. That's meaningless to say you'd steal things to shake lulav. Why? The Torah doesn't say you can just take people's money and do a mitzvah. Ragal mitzvoseha yesh l'rishus lidchos zemizeh. Within the mitzvahs of the Torah, there's a prioritization scheme. Right? You can do this, you can't do that. But no one says that any mitzvah sase will override gzela. That's crazy. Kena inyan devi arta ramikir becha hu inyan enoshi lahasir hanezek mehem ula abin hamazik. So it's the same thing here, except we're not talking about stealing. We're talking about getting rid of nuisances, right, or dangerous animals, as the case may be. Why? V'lo hifkira Torah shmiras hamedaber hazulasi avur sheyakayim zeh mitzvah shiluach. We don't say that there's no more mitzvah of guarding other people's lives, right? Of making public safety, essentially. We don't say that public safety disappears just because there's a mitzvah of shiluach, right? Why do you kill a shor shenagach or a bird that killed? Because it's public safety. That's why the Torah says to kill the animal. We don't get rid of that whole concern for public safety just because there's a mitzvah shiluach hakein. It doesn't work like that. Same way we don't get rid of personal property if someone needs to shake lulav. Same point. V'im kein, eino mitzuva lishloach mazik leharav ne adam. We never will tell you there's a mitzvah to send away a dangerous animal that would damage people. V'kimach eino mitzuva lishloach sumater gam likachena. Once there's no obligation to send it away, then you can actually take it, bring it home, take your own risk, right? Because there's no mitzvah. So, I mean, the Torah is not going to force you to, maybe you should send it to Beis Din. But the point is, there's no mitzvah to send it away. V'gam alav eino, right? There's no more ase, there's no more los ase of shiluach hakein because it just doesn't get off the ground. I gave away which side of the alumnus I think it's on, right? But that's basically, well, actually, it's a bit more complicated than that. We'll get it in a second. V'zeh miyushav perish bizeh im lakra over belav v'dok. Right, if you take it, right, you can't send it away. Why? If you did send it away, you'd actually be violating a lav. Right, V'aran niskashim. The Ran had some trouble with this, but I figured it out. I mean, again, so to speak. Right, I filled that last line in. Right, but so what is the lumnus here? So it's definitely not a clash. Right, he says this is not begeder hadachia, ain't a begeder hadachia. It's not a clash. So how does it work? What is the logic? So I think there's two different ways of saying over this Rav Meir Simcha. I don't know if people want to try him out. In the room, on the computer.
I think it's saying it's not mitzvah versus mitzvah.
Not mitzvah versus mitzvah, meaning?
Like when he talks about stealing a lulav, he doesn't treat it as like, oh, a latase and an ase and latase whatever. He like treats it as some more like fundamental principle of like the Torah being mafkir or not mafkir people's property.
The hefkir part doesn't fully carry over, right? Because you're not being mafkir anything, but it's something parallel to being mafkir, right? It's being the idea would be giving up public safety would be parallel to being mafkir someone's thing, right? But I do think there are two different ways of taking this. Yeah, Nettie, was that a hand?
Yeah, I was just going to suggest like one way is to kind of say that it's like categorically excluded because like it's a public safety threat and therefore like you just can't have public safety threats like lying around. So it's just not included in something that the Torah would tell us to send away at all.
Right. I think that is definitely what Rav Meir Simcha is saying. I still think there's two different ways of saying that. Meaning, how exactly is that functioning in terms of like the conceptual mechanics, right? That for something that's a public safety threat and for something that involves giving up public property, etc., we don't allow mitzvahs to be overridden. But how do we conceptualize that in this case? So I think again that the two remaining tzadim both could work. You could say it's a din in the cheftza, so to speak. This bird is so dangerous that we're not going to apply any. You know, there's no mitzvah that can be chal on this bird. There's no, because of the status of this bird as a dangerous bird, it's somehow excluded from other mitzvahs. That's one way of thinking. But the other way of looking at it is that it's really on the person, right? You have the primary obligation to get rid of this bird, right? And because you have that obligation, there are no other obligations can get off the ground. Your primary obligation is to take care of the bird. My sense is the second option is more reasonable because he keeps talking about what your obligation is. So I don't think it quite goes over into the other side of the hakira, so to speak. But the one thing the one argument in favor of seeing it like that it's about the status of the animal is his comparison to gazelle, to stealing, right? Why is it prohibited to steal? It's not because you have some obligation with that property. It's because it's really out of your realm. It's just it's in a different realm. It's outside of your purview in terms of mitzvahs because it belongs to someone else. So maybe you could argue that similarly here, this bird is outside of your purview because it's dangerous and needs to be taken care of in that way rather than doing shiloh hakein. I still think that's the less likely option, but it is a possible way of reading it. Either way, Rav Meir Silva certainly rejects the clash option, and it's because of this public safety. But is that a function of some of the status of the animal? Is it just a function of your priorities and what you have to do? I think there's room to quibble. Tamar, and then Sarah, and then we'll look at the Chazon Ish. Yeah.
So what's interesting is he's saying it's not a clash, and it's clear that he doesn't believe it's a clash. But it's almost like he's not taking issue with the approach that this specific example could be a clash. Like, you could almost read him as saying, like, there's no such thing as a clash in general, and, like, it's not like it's, you know, it doesn't get off the ground because the pasuk excludes it or this or that. It's something very that, it's like, if you have two lavim that, like, contradict each other, it's like, only one of them exists at a time. So, like, this one was never included in the other one, and, you know, like, mitzvot don't battle each other out. Like, he seems to be just kind of, like, taking issue to that in general, maybe with the comparison to Gezel, like.
But the challenge with that, though, is we do know from many other sugyas, right, like Aseh Docholos Aseh. So there is that category, right? That would be Geder HaDechia. So I think he's not saying this as a general rule. Sometimes we do have Dechia issues. Here, for our case, it can't be Dechia for the reason he spells out, right? That, like, it would somehow undermine public order if people didn't have property anymore because they could be overridden by mitzvahs, or if dangerous animals could be sent around for religious reasons.
Then in the case of, like, the comparison, you know, what, I guess, like, what causes some mitzvot to be, like, susceptible to dechuya, and he seems to be saying, like, this isn't, you know, you can't have a mitzvah that contradicts X or Y, like, you know.
Well, I don't think he says that in general.
Right, not in general, but I'm saying, like, for this case specifically, he's saying it's not dechuya, but you can't have it because it contradicts this other thing. So it almost sounds like he wants to say it's dechuya, but he doesn't think it's formulated that way.
Right, so I think if you say it's not dechuya, the way to say it is it's like mufka, it's excluded. For one reason or another, right? It doesn't get off the other obligation doesn't get off the ground, or this item is categorically excluded from all other obligations, right? So I think at the end of the day, it wins out, right? But the question is, how do you get there? And yeah, he says not through dechia, but through some other means. Okay, Sarah.
I think I'm not quite getting, like, if Rav Meir's input does give a justification for why we don't treat this as an assay and a law test, like, what makes, I guess, stealing different to any other law test that we wouldn't apply that model? I just don't. I feel like something hasn't been filled in.
Are you asking a why question? Are you?
Or sorry, you, he just says it's like hevel. It's just absurd to say that we can allow someone to steal a law in order to fulfill another mitzvah. But why is that? Like, why is that absurd? If really the only, like, halachically, what's happening behind that scene,
right,
is that you're, yeah.
So I think you're right in that he doesn't spell out the mechanics here, right? He says it can't possibly be. Okay, so what's the, like, the conceptual logic that leads us to that point? So I, that's why I was saying there are two different ways of thinking about it. One is that just the mitzvah isn't chal. In certain cases, you know, you have a certain obligation that prevents this other obligation from coming into effect. Or you might say there are certain objects that are excluded. Like this lulav, it doesn't belong to me. So it's not... You know, I can't take it into consideration for Aseh Docholos Aseh. It's just outside of my purview. So I think one of those two are the how. I don't know if you can answer the why. I mean, you know, it may depend on your like political theology or something. But in terms of how it plays itself out, I think those are the two options that Rav Meir Silva doesn't explicitly state. Yeah, Jordana.
This might seem like a bit of a silly question, but conceptually, I'm trying to wrap my head around this because, whether you say there's a clash or not, like, he's saying, like, it's absurd that there's a clash. And I get it. Like, he's saying, okay, it's not that there's a clash, it's that there's a caveat within one mitzvah, which allows us to pick one mitzvah over the other. But at the end of the day, you're picking one mitzvah over the other. So, like, tachlis, what difference does that make? Like, whether he says it's a clash or not.
Well, the difference is whether you need to follow the rules of how clashes work. Right?
Meaning
if you have an assay versus a los assay and an assay, the double team wins. But here, we go against that. How could that be? The answer is it's not a clash where the bigger thing wins. You sort of undermined it, and that's how the smaller force of the mitzvah of whatever sending it to Bezin, sending it to the Gizbar can beat out the larger force of Shiloh HaKein.
But is that considered a larger force just because there's an assay and a los assay?
If you're thinking about it quantitatively, then yes. Right? It's more. There's two, and it's an assay and a los assay. Usually that's why it wins, right? It's a clash, it wins. Here, we circumvent the clash, and yeah. I think that's the main, like, if you want, like, results, what's the difference in results? That's the main difference in results, which is why he says what he says on the Ran, right? The Ran's trying to sort this out. The mayor simply tries to sort this out, and that's where we end up. So let's move to the Chazon Ish. And, oh, wow, time is flying. Also not intended. So it's really hard. So the Chazon Ish, I think, we're not going to read through all of it, but he's pretty clear, I think, in rejecting the approach that that certain objects, certain items, are just excluded by the fact of what they are. You know, just like the lulav. The lulav belongs to someone; it can't possibly be part of my mitzvah of lulav because it belongs to someone else. It's excluded from the calculus. So I think here, right, the fourth line in the Chazon Ish, Yesh Lomar, the kimlei de afagav dehi hektish ba'i l'shalcha. Right? He's rejecting it, the implicit view he's rejecting here. You might have said, by hektish, there are no mitzvos, which sounds really counterintuitive and sacrilegious. But what that means is, if something belongs to hektish, you have no business using it for any other mitzvah. The mitzvah it's for is hektish. Now, usually, of course, this is true, because, like, how are you going to do a mitzvah without utilizing the object? And you might get hanah from it, you know, and you're not supposed to. But the case of sending away a bird, You're not benefiting from it in any way. The only thing you're doing is fulfilling a mitzvah. And so what the Chazon Ish says is there's no categorical exclusion of items that belong to Hekdesh from mitzvos. You still have to do mitzvos with Hekdesh. He has some proofs to that. And it's clear he takes the other side of that tzad, right? If you read Rav Meir Simcha as saying that things that belong to Hekdesh are excluded from your calculus, he doesn't talk about Hekdesh, he's talking about the bird, right? Things that are that have the death penalty, that are sort of pending in court, are excluded from all mitzvos because they're sort of property of the court or something like that. Not literally property, but they're within the control of the court, and therefore you can't do mitzvos with them. The Chazon Ish says that's absolutely not the reason why. And just jumping to the last line, he says, Yesh lomar debishas shiluach ba'inan bas chiyuva. Right, he says it's definitely about a clash. You need to have a chiyuv to send it away at the same time as you have a chiyuv to do this other mitzvah, hektish or whatnot. And the clash, again, I don't know if he doesn't need to say it's a clash. He might say it's the undermining approach. What he's definitely not saying is that the item, by virtue of the fact that it belongs to hektish, it's excluded from shiloh hakein. Right? He says that very clearly. I think there is room for someone to disagree on that count, and as Rav Meir Simcha very well might be disagreeing. Okay, so with that, we close out. Oh, and just we should make a few notes. We'll definitely come back to this. But what we've seen, what we saw in the Ran and Rav Meir Simcha, that's talking about the harag, right? The murderous bird. It's not explicitly talking about hektish. But you could carry over the logic to hektish, right? The conceptual options would all carry over, with the one, the trickiest one to carry over is the status, the ownership status, right? It belongs to hektish. It's not within your realm for doing things. Although Rav Meir Simcha basically carried, you know, he said his point in the case of harag. So he's carrying over the excluded object or bailus ownership type of logic, even to where it's less obvious. So there is, you know, it's not unreasonable that you could say the same exact lumdus in both, right? And whatever the Ran says for harag, he would say a similar thing for hektish, and same for Rav Meir Simcha, the same for the Chazon Ish. But you know, it's just worth noting, you could also draw a distinction between them and hold that thought, because maybe we'll see that. But why don't we move forward now to the Rambam? And do we have a volunteer to read the Rambam? Yeah, Hannah. All right.
Amakti Shomla Benet
bird for a Benet Habayit, and it flies away from you. But then, like, you go and you recognize that if you find it sitting on like the little chicks or on eggs, you take like the whole thing, the whole nest, and you bring it to your bar. James Shiloh, I gave no thing to touch you. Shemar, I saw Benet Habayit, and you in Shina Shah. because we don't, we're not knowing the distribution of the Chaim for the case of someone that Moksha, you know, says, I have a Yitzi Gafa, but these things don't belong to you because they're Moksha. And for an oaf, for a bird that killed someone, it's, you don't send it away because it's a mitzvah to bring it to Beastin to judge it there.
Okay. Right, so these are the two rules in our Gemara, the two rules of both Hekdesh and Harag being excluded from Shiloh HaKein. What is unusual and or troubling about this Rambam?
You bring the entire nest to the Kitzbar, including the thing, and also he says that he's talking about the bunny. The bunny are in Anshalach, even though we're talking about the aim.
Right. Okay. So on the first point, I don't think it's that crazy. Meaning, if it sounds like his case is the mother was hektish and then it flew away and started a new family somewhere, I don't know. And so the eggs also are hektish because it come from the mother, right? So it all does belong to the hektish. So you send the mother, you send the chicks too. So I don't think that's too crazy as long as the case is set up the right way. But I think you're the second thing you noted, right? The what's the rule? The rule that the Rambam says, the drasha. Shenemar ve'esabanim tikach lach ve'elu einan shelach. That's not what the Gemara said, right? We saw the Gemara. The Gemara says, shaleach tishalach esayim b'misha atametzuv l'shalcho yatzazeh she'i atametzuv l'shalcho elolivi lidei gizbar. So the Rambam ignores the Gemara's drasha and makes up his own drasha, right? Now we said before, tikach lach, right, v'lo l'klavecha, right? You have to be able to eat it. It has to be kosher. If you're going to have to throw these chicks to the dogs, then the mitzvah doesn't apply. So that's fair game. That pun was intended, I apologize. But that is a fair drasha. But the Rambam is saying something different. He's not saying it needs to be kosher. He's saying there's some special din that you need to own the chicks or potentially be able to own the chicks, which would exclude a case of hektish. Right, so this is very odd. Now, the second drasha of the Rambam just quotes the Gemara. It's not like the Rambam, obviously the Rambam knew the Gemara, and he even shows it by citing the second drasha almost word for word. Right, you have a mitzvah to send it to Beis Din, therefore you don't have a mitzvah to send it away. So why does the Rambam ignore that on the first drasha? So this question, this Rambam, troubled many Achronim. And we have here two different approaches in the Achronim, the Lechem Mishnah and the Minchas Chinuch. There are several others who spoke on this, but I think this is the probably a good place to start, to work with. And see, I'm trying to figure out what we should read. Yeah, so let's read the Lechem Mishnah. Let's start from the top of page 3. Because he first quotes the Rambam, he quotes the Gemara. We can skip that because we've seen that already. But then he says at the end of the first line on page 3, or after the parentheses and the plus sign, V'yesh lahakshos. Yes, V'yesh lahakshos al Rabbeinu. We can ask a question on the Rambam. Lama hi niach ha-ta'am ha-amur b'gemara shepatru es ha-mukdashin. Why does the Rambam leave aside, ignore the reason given by the Gemara, that Pater's kachim mishum reshe dekra, the beginning of the pasuk, the kamar shaleach tishalach, yatzazesh yedam etzuv l'shalcho. Right, that's what the Gemara said. It darshes from the beginning of the pasuk. V'naka tame mishum seife dekra. Instead, the Rambam says from the end of the pasuk, the ve'esabanim tikach lach. He says the drasha from the end of the pasuk, a new made-up drasha, not what the Gemara said. Why did he do that? V'yesh lomar, da tosvos kasvu. Now, right, the Rambam's not the first one. I mean, historically, maybe he was. I don't know. But we saw the Tosfos already quoted the Kuntres, Vesabanim Tikachach. Now, the Kuntres didn't like that. He rejected that idea. But at least that prospect we saw already, right? So, V'yesh Lomar, that Tosfos Kasvu, to be Sefei Dekra, that Banim Tikachach, Lo Matzi Lasuye. Right? The Kuntres in Tosfos says we can't darshan from Vesabanim Tikachach, Da Beitzei Torim Lo Molim Lo Nenin, because the eggs of a turtle dove are only asur ba'na midor abana, not midor reisa. Klomer lo malam midor reisa, v'lo nene midor abanan. V'im kein heichim atzina lemeimar ve'elu einan shalcha. You can't possibly say these eggs aren't yours because actually midor reisa, according to the Torah's law, these eggs are yours. Only midor abanan are they not yours, given the peculiarities of beitzei torim. Tam min haTorah ein moalin v'kasvu. So this is Tosfos, right? Kasvu v'af al gav. Right, remember Tosfos said a complication. Actually, if even Beitzei Torim, if they happen to be Kedushas Benek Habayis, that you donated them not for their potential carbon prospects, but for their prospect as items of value that could be traded in. right? If you were makdish them, kedushas bedek habayis, then actually there is an iser d'oraisa to use them, right? So that was the complication that Tosfos said, but you know they said our Gemara is really talking about a case of kedushas mizbeach, where you want these whatever the shiloh hakein thing would be, you want to bring it on the mizbeach, and in that case beitzei torah are only d'rabanan, and the drasha wouldn't work, right? Sort of a technicality why the drasha wouldn't work. But here, and this is where it gets very interesting, v'rabbeinu, what about the Rambam? Is the Rambam talking about a case of kedushas mizbeach or kedushas bedek habayis? How do you know that? He says so. The Rambam says he didn't have to say this. He says hamakdish ov lebedek habayis, right? Beginning of source 7. The Rambam says we're talking about bedek habayis. That's not in the Gemara. The Gemara sounds like most likely it's talking about kedushas mizbeach. The Rambam v'rabbeinu vaday shu savar kein. The Rambam holds like this view that the Kuntris rejected. The kamen shu kasav din shel bedek habayis. The Rambam is talking about a case of bedek habayis where you set aside the bird monetarily for hekdesh, not to bring it as a karban, monetarily. Shapir nakatame mishum esabanim tikachloch. Tosfos' objection that beitzei torah are only asur midrabanan, the pasuk wouldn't exclude it because it actually is yours. That's not a problem anymore because we're talking about kedushas bedek habayis, which actually is midaraisa, not yours, right? So the drasha works now. Shu pashit yosir, and that's a simpler drasha. Right, you'd much rather have a drasha of esabanim tikachloch yatzazu she'eino shalcha. That's an easier drasha than this one. You have to send it away, whatever. Simpler drasha. The Rambam goes with it. V'chitema ma'ilo kasav din kachem isbeach. The Shmuel the Amar kachem bedek habayis af kachem bedek habayis ka'amar v'im ken ha'ilo lichto kachem isbeach lofach zlitin tam shelo lo teshalach shalech teshalach v'ishel metzuve shu tam ha'shav l'kachem isbeach l'kachem bedek habayis. Okay, but still, summarizing that piece, why doesn't the Rambam give the case that the Gemara gave, the case that applies according to both opinions of kedushas mizbeach, right, where the bird is set aside to be a karban, which actually his reason doesn't work for, right? The Rambam, think about it, there's two scenarios, kedushas bedek habayis, kedushas mizbeach. The Rambam makes up a new drasha that only works for one of the scenarios. Why not give the Gemara's reason that both opinions in the Gemara have, we'll see tomorrow, and that applies to all scenarios, right? Why is the Rambam intentionally limiting his drasha here? V'yesh lomar, dekachem mizbeach, mafkinan le me'ov shaharagas ha'nefesh, depatr milishaleach. Now, this is what we call a tzvei dinim for people who want lumdish terminology, right? There's really two different conceptual or two different categories that are in effect simultaneously here. How so? There's a carryover from the second din, the last line in the Rambam, to the previous din, right? Because let's go through, what does the Rambam say? The Rambam says, for a bird of hekdesh, your putter, why? Because the chicks wouldn't be yours. Right, yatzu she'en tikachlach ve'elu enan shalcha. Then the Rambam says, if the bird is harag and potentially chayav misa, you don't do shliach hakein. Why? Because mitzvah levi ol bezdin lo dun oso. You have to send it away. That second reason that the Rambam says about the case of harag, the bird that killed, actually also applies in equal measure to the case of hektesh. Just like you have to send the bird away if it killed to bezdin, instead of sending it shiloh hakein, you also have to send the bird to hekdesh, if it's hekdesh, to the gizbar, rather than sending it away. Okay, the Rambam only mentions, in that din, he only mentions harag, but it would apply equally in a case of hekdesh. Right, so the Rambam really has two different dinim at the same time. Rule number one, if the bird is not yours, let's say it belongs to if the eggs are not yours, they belong to hekdesh, your putter. Number two, if the bird is needed for other purposes, it has a competing obligation, either hektish or it murdered someone or something like that. If it has a competing obligation, you're also putter. So these are both operative, right? Tzvei dinim. Both of these rules are operative simultaneously. The Rambam doesn't spell out that the rule mentioned in Mount Harag applies also to hektish, but it's implicit. Let me just finish reading, then I'll take all the questions. Right, the same pasuk. If you notice, the Gemara, the drasha for both hektesh and harag is the same pasuk. Shaliach tishalach esayim b'misha adam mitzvah l'shalcho, and not something else. So you could just say it's the same din. He doesn't need to say it twice. He says it for one and it carries over to the other. Kiramri b'gmar hilka chof tahor pater ma'itam adam rakash lech l'shalach v'kemen shekasav din ov shaharag mikan nilmod din kachim izbeach d'chad tamahu. We carry it over, and that's the Rambam. So this is the answer of the Lechem Mishnah, which is that the Rambam says it has a new din. It's not in the Gemara for some technical reason, but it also applies. And really, the Gemara is right. You know, everyone's right. The Gemara's reason is true that that the mother, if the mother needs to be sent somewhere else, Hekdish or Harag cases, you're Pater. And if the chicks don't belong to you because they belong to Hekdish, you're also Pater. Both of those are true. But the Rambam mentioned one in one case and one in the other case. That's the Lechem Mishnah. We'll mention the Minchas Chinuch in a second. He has some additional implications, but first there were like 17 hands. So let's take the questions, and then we'll end with the coup de grace of the Minchas Chinuch. Okay, we'll start with Nedi, and then the people who had their hands up before are welcome to re-raise them. Yeah.
Yeah, just a question on the Lechem Mishnah. The whole, like, kind of logic that he gives of why the Rambam does the Tikach Lach is because of, like, Pashat Yoser, then wouldn't it even be more Pashat to just say the, like, Mitzvah Lishloach, because that could apply to all three cases? Like, it's not like it can't apply to the Kachay Bedek HaBayis case.
Yeah, I think by Pashat, I don't think he means, like, the most, the best reason for everything. I think it just means, like, the most straightforward. So it's very straightforward, right? That's about a tikach lach. You need to be able to take the chicks. If you can't take the chicks, then the mitzvah doesn't apply. That's not comprehensive. That's why he has the other din, right? So he says both in the end. Look, anytime you say the Rama went against the Gemara because it was simpler, you're always going to have, you know, like it would have been simpler to just follow the Gemara, right? So, you know, that's always going to be the weak point. But I think that's what he would respond, that it's more straightforward, even if it's not comprehensive. And that's why you have both dinim at the end of the day. And the Minchas Chinuch will give another reason why there's both dinim, another angle on that. But yeah, there were some hands before. Maybe the Lechem Mishnah solved everyone's problems. That's always nice when it happens. No other questions. Okay, so let's look quickly. I think we're nearing the end of our allotted time, right? But time check. Yeah, but let's quickly talk about the Minchas Chinuch. I don't know if we're going to read it inside, but he says, I'll just read a few words. L'anias dati, this is like the 10th line or 8th line, shnei ha-ta'amim tzrichim. You need both reasons in the Rambam, meaning the es ha-banim tikach lach ve'elu inim shalcha and the Gemara's reason. And de'im hi hektesh umarda v'yesh v'galei beitzim v'afrochim she'ena shala de'far kasavti, de'memunach, fine, he gives complications there. There's two scenarios. Scenario number one, the mother is hektish, but not the chicks, right? Let's say someone was makdish the mother, then somehow it ran away, and it kidnapped someone else, some other bird's chicks, right? So the chicks are chulin, they don't belong to hektish, the mother does. In such a case, according to the Rambam, do you do shiluach hakein? No, because you need to send the mother, not away, but to the Gizbar. That's the Gemara's drasha, or that's the extrapolation from Mitzvah Leo the Bezdin in the Rambam, that we say not just Bezdin, but also to Gizbar. At the same time, v'im hayulo beitzim o'efrochim kedoshim v'nasa hefker v'ezo of nasa osam v'achar kach matza osam v'ha'em hichulin v'robetz aleim d'yachol ha'shaleach z'aim d'aim b'shiluach nechle b'vei Rambam v'mashikasav of shargas ha'nefesh etc. Derakala aim in mitzvah shleach. We call them pater huadin. Right, pater huadin behektish aim. Fine. So you also have the flip side case of, and I think we have to catch another couple lines to fully get this, but we'll just say it outside. You have the flip side case where you have the eggs. Someone was makdish the eggs, right? No mother in the picture. Then some bird swoops in, takes the whole nest, and moves it somewhere else. So these eggs, you no longer have access to them. Theoretically, they're hektish, but they're far away. And some other random kosher bird is sitting on the eggs. The bird, the mother bird, is, or non-mother bird, the adoptive parent bird, is not hektish, but the eggs are hektish. In that case, what would the Rambam say? Do you have a mitzvah of shiluach hakein or not? No. Why? The eggs aren't yours. So the tzvei dinim, the fact that they're both reasons apply, actually has a real nafkamina, right? Either the mother or the chicks, if either one is hektesh, and you have these funky scenarios where you have one and not the other, if either one is hektesh, you're pater for two different reasons. If the mother's hektesh, you need to send the mother to the gizbar. If the baby is hektesh, you need to, you don't own it, so it's excluded. So this is the Minchas Chinuch's take on the Rambam. I wanted to suggest a different take on the Rambam, and then I'll take some questions. So the point that feels a little weak in both the Lecha Mishnah and the Minchas Chinuch is the idea that mitzvah l'avio l'besdin carries over to the Hekdesh mitzvah, especially because, as we saw, some people, the Chassam Sofer, questions very well whether there's actually a mitzvah to give it to Besdin or not. Who says there's a mitzvah to give it to the Gizbar? Who says there's a mitzvah to give it to the Gizbar? But on the other hand, there's good reason to think that you have to give over the bird for Urviyarta Rami Kirbecha if it murdered. So I wonder if it's possible to read the Rambam like this. The two cases, the case of Hekdesh and the case of Harag, actually have different rules entirely. They're not parallel to one another. They're different entirely. They function differently. In terms of Hekdesh, right? If it's Hekdesh, you have to give it to the Gizbar. Or the way the Rambam puts it, actually he doesn't say it like that. He says, Ve'elu einan shelcha. What I think that's saying is, remember the category we had of this item is somehow excluded because it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to Hekdesh. It's excluded from the mitzvah. I think that's what the Rambam's saying with Hekdesh. Elu einan shelcha. You couldn't say it more clearly, right? This object is excluded, just like you can't hijack someone's lulav and shake it. You can't hijack Hekdesh's birds and send them free. And I think that may apply not only to the chicks, but to the mother as well. He says, v'atzabanim tikach lach ve'elu einan shelcha. But as we saw, he's really treating this all together, right? He says, ein shiluach ha'em noheg bimukdashim. If there's Hekdesh at all, sending the mother doesn't work. And he's trying to figure out, you shouldn't send away the bird to wherever it goes, but you should be mevian l'idei gizbar, right? As Hannah read, you should take the whole chicken caboodle and send it to Hekdesh. Take the mother, take the chicks, and send it to Hekdesh. And so we have the drasha on the word tikach lach, right? But really, it's not just for the chicks; it's for the whole nest, mother and chicks. You send it to Hekdesh. That's the din for Hekdesh. On the other hand, and why does the Rambam take that approach? Because saying that there's a chiyuv to send the mother to Hekdesh maybe isn't true. Who said there's a chiyuv to send the mother to Hekdesh, right? So what there is it belongs to Hekdesh, and it's none of your business to send it away. You have to give it to Hekdesh. It belongs to them. Not because there's a chiyuv to send it there, just because monetarily, so to speak, from a mamonos perspective, it belongs to them. On the other hand, by the case of Harag, what the Rambam says is explicitly, mitzuveh lehavio lebezdin, ladunoso. You have an obligation, uviyarta rami kirbecha, to send this bird to Besdin, to have the case be dealt with. Now, I think a Navkamina, if you read the Rambam this way, is in a case of Harag, I think either way you have to read it this way, right? A case of Harag, if the mother is Hekdesh, but not the chicks, if the chicks are Hekdesh, but not the mother, right, there's no Ptur. You still would have to do Shiluach HaKein, it would seem, right? If the mother is not Hekdesh, but the chicks are, sorry, Harag, right? If the mother murdered and the chicks didn't, that would be a problem. If some of you had a case where the chick murdered, maybe unlikely, very precocious little chick murdered someone somehow. In such a scenario, regardless of how likely it is, in such a scenario, you wouldn't have the ptur. You'd still be chayav to send away the mother because it's not a din in ownership or not. It's a din in the mother needs to be sent, or the murderer needs to be sent to Beis Din if it's the mother good. If it's the chick that murdered, then actually you would still send the mother away. That would be one of the nachminas. But in any event, that was my suggestion of how to read the Rambam, that Hekdesh is a function of belonging to Hekdesh, whereas the case of Harag is a function of your obligation. You need to send it to Beis Din rather than send it away. Okay. If there are questions, we'll take some. I know people don't like asking at the end. Rina.
Okay. This Rambam kind of did remind me of Hashavat Aveda that we talked about before that. You said, I think it was the Chatam Sofer, or one of the other commentaries rejected that view that it's Hashavat Aveda, that it doesn't apply to Hekdesh at all. But here, the whole wording of the word Shelcha, because it's not yours, like you don't own it, and bringing it to the Beit HaMikdash, like kind of does to me remind me of Hashavat Aveda.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you in terms of there being a similarity. It can't technically be Hashavat Aveda because of the Drasha, But focus on ownership and status, the status of the object and who owns it, making it excluded, I think is parallel, right? And I think, yes, I think the Rambam is in some ways is like directly arguing on the view that there's no mitzvah to return it to Beis Din. And the only worry is what you know, the results, what the results would be if it maybe would damage someone. Okay, or someone would use it in Isser Hana. Just to very quickly summarize what we did today. So there's three approaches, all raised by Tosfos in one form or other, as to what the actual basis, the logic is. Is it that you have some competing obligation, you need to send it away to here or there, not Shiloh HaKein, but to Beis Din or to the Gizbar? Is it because Takala, we're worried about some problem down the line? Or is it that it's about the kids, right? The kids need to belong to you, or the kids have to, right? They're not Shelcha. Because they belong to Hekdesh or they have some other competing obligation. We saw, even though Tosfos rejected that second and third approach, there were others who adopted it. Tosfos Rush, Kuntris, Chasam Sofer, for the one about Takala, which we said either might be the same as what the Gemara is saying, an interpretation of the Gemara, or an alternate approach. And the final approach of it being owned by someone, that we saw, it seems like the Rambam says that idea. That it's owned by someone. That sounds like the Rambam applies that, at least regarding Bunim. We also analyzed, we tried to figure out this idea of sending it away, of having a competing obligation. Is it that there's a clash between the two obligations and one wins out? Is it that the competing obligation of sending it to Hekdesh somehow blocks the obligation of Shiluach HaKein from getting off the ground? Or is it somehow the status of this object is such that it's excluded? I think we saw different formulations between the Ran and Rav Meir Simcha. They, you know, the Ran was sort of between the clash approach and the competing obligation doesn't let this one get off the ground. Rav Meir Simcha was between competing obligation doesn't let this get off the ground, or maybe a different ownership option. Chazon Ish rejected the status of the item or ownership option, but we saw maybe that came back in the Rambam. Just one final note, the entire Takala approach, to circle back to Tamar's question an hour ago, the entire Takala approach would seem to fit in the track that the object is excluded. Right? There's no competing obligation as an obligation. The only obligation is not to end up with bad results. So it would seem like that's really focused on the object not getting into the wrong hands, which would be, right, so you can extend this Chakira to some of the other tracks as well. All right, I think we're out of time, but I guess if there's final questions on the summary, we can do that. But otherwise, okay, I think we're good. And next time we'll pick up with the continuation of the Gemara.